sitting around talking movies. Another episode, another jam-packed, exciting episode. I'm Neil Rosen, and I'm joined today, as always, by
Bill McCuddy
and
Bill Bergoli.
And we have some new people today joining us. We have Perry Nemiroff.
Hello.
From Collider and comedian extraordinaire Dan Natterman,
who
we sent Dan to some movies, and he's going to chime in on his opinion as well. And here's what we're talking about today. We're talking about that new Sandra Bullock movie, Our Brand is Crisis, with Billy Bob Thornton. And we're going to talk about this new Kristen Wiig movie called Nasty Baby. Yeah. And Halloween's coming up, and we're going to talk about a movie that's on demand and also in theaters called Tales of Halloween. And also on demand is this Jason Bateman and Rebecca Hall movie called The Gift. So that's what we're going to be talking about. And if you've never listened before, this is kind of an after show to a movie that a TV show that we do called Talking Pictures, where we, out of the 300 movies that are on demand, people only know a couple of titles. So we tell you about the movies that are up there that you should know about or you should avoid, because as Bill McCuddy always says,
we watch all the movies so you don't
have to. That is correct. Okay, so let's start with Our Brand.
Is that what I always say? It's something like that.
You
don't cut off your last line, which is so you don't have to.
Right.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Same Not everything's again. Good on demand.
I'm going to give you another chance. What the line is.
We watch the bad movies so you don't have
that's
to.
That's the line.
Thank
that's
you.
The line.
Patent pending.
All right. And so let's start off with Our Brand is Crisis. Hits theaters this weekend. Sandra Bullock plays this political strategist extraordinaire who is, her latest gig is to go down to Bolivia to represent, to kind of like strategize and come up with a campaign for the ex-president of Bolivia, who's running to now be president again. He's played by this actor, Joaquin de Almeida, and he's trailing really badly in the polls. Nobody likes this guy. Her rival, Bullock's rival, is this equally savvy guy played by Billy Bob Thornton. He's working for the opposition, and neither Bullock or Thompson or Thornton care really about what the candidates stand for or if they'll even be good for the country of Bolivia. All they care about is winning at any cost, and they'll employ a lot of dirty tricks and do whatever it takes to get there.
Sandra Bullock will drop her pants if she has to.
And
in fact, she does when they pass another bus.
Yeah, you didn't find her funny in this. I thought she was kind of funny.
There are lots of, she executive produced, so there are a lot of dewy close-ups of her where she looks gorgeous even when she's vomiting because she doesn't like the high altitude down there. I just found her a little bit miscast. She's obviously involved in the making of the film, and it's based on a better documentary from about 10 years ago based on the same woman. I thought Billy Bob Thornton was great. I love him when he's slimy and sleazy, and he's like at his best.
That's when the movie was at its best. When they're like, he has this lecherous rapport with Sandra. He's always coming up with these.
And he's representing the other candidates,
right? So and I don't know. It was unclear if they ever had a relationship before. Like,
no, I think they did. Definitely.
I got that impression. That's for sure. I'd be curious to see the documentary that it's based on now.
Well, it's a guy in a documentary. You know, like Sandra Bullock's part is played by a guy. Like they changed it to a woman.
And George is that true?
Yeah, George Clooney apparently was supposed to play the Sandra Bullock part. Yeah.
Oh, that I didn't know.
He was
know.
Sitting on the script, and she saw the script and said, I want to make this for me.
But he's like involved. Isn't he like an executive producer, one of the producers of the thing?
Aaron Hesloff. Gordon Hesloff is a producing pal. They were sitting on the script.
Ahead we will hear from her in just a moment. But Dan, as our special guest, first, what did
you
think?
Well, thank you for...
Yeah, we snuck you into a private screening, too, the other night.
Yes.
Right, which is kind of cool. Was that the first time you've done that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I mean, thank you for making me feel welcome, because I feel I'm a little bit out of my depth here. I'm not a critic, normally.
Well, everybody's a critic.
Everyone's a critic. We're just professional critics. But what do you think of the film?
Well, I enjoyed the film because it was a glimpse into a world that I didn't even know existed, really. I didn't know that these people existed, that you could pay, and that they could make you into a winner or a loser. It's kind of a little disheartening, if in fact elections work like that, you know.
But I think they all work like that. I mean, I think that's, and we'll talk about some other movies that are like that too, but that's the thing I liked about the movie, was that nobody really cared at all. It was like, what did she say? People want to be, we're going to make the whole campaign fear. We're going to make it about fear, and you're going to be scared. You know, we're going to make the electorate scared, and what do people want when they're scared? They want comfort. They want somebody that they know.
How the last five presidents have gotten elected, at least the Republicans.
That's the best part of the movie, is the way that they present it like a big game that she just wants to win. The problem is when it turns out to be about something else.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to ruin the ending, but you see, I liked the first 40 minutes of the movie. I was really there. I thought it was funny the way, like, nobody could care less about, like, what the country stood, what the candidate stood for. It's just, let's come up with a strategy. No matter, like, if the strategy was, you know, you're going to be an ex-criminal who spent jail time because, you know, and if that would have worked, that's not in the movie, but I'm just saying, fine, let's do that. You will come up with a whole fake backstory. And that goes on in so many, you know, areas of politics in so many countries, including this country, that they just, you know, what did that Saturday Night Live skit do when the one where Larry David was on and Hillary Clinton goes, I think you're going to love the Hillary that my team has put together for this particular campaign. Right. It's like they sit down. It's like, OK, here's how we're going to present you. And here's how you're going to be for this campaign.
Can I talk about because I don't know. What are the rules in terms of spoiler, you know, alert?
Don't give a spoiler away.
But what about that bus chase scene?
Well, that's what I was talking about.
You were talking about that bus chase scene. So unless I'm missing something. Why the hell were they risking their lives trying to pass a bus?
To get to the same place.
The thrill of winning.
Yeah, I think
she just wanted to drive.
I know,
but
I'm with you. Like, right? It's like a windy road where, like, you could, like, anybody.
The chances of dying were, I would say, 90%.
It also conveniently comes at a point in the film where you kind of need that little thrill of a chase scene.
Yeah, there was otherwise going to be no action in here. I agree.
Well, maybe some films don't need action. You know?
This is
My Dinner with Andre, great example. No action.
Yeah, I find that you're right, Dan. A lot of
I felt that needed more chase scenes, actually, My Dinner with Andre. They had just gotten in a car and gone to another restaurant.
I really don't like chase scenes. I rarely like chase scenes in films unless they really... I'm really invested in the characters, and it's really a plot-driven thing. But I find a lot of movies that have nothing to... There's no reason for a chase scene, and they will just build it in. And I'm just sitting there and go, okay, here's the obligatory chase scene for no reason that I guess... you know, I could just see the studio's exec sitting around going like, well, where's your chase scene? You know?
Like, well, they probably paid like a punch-up guy $1 million to stick that chase scene in there.
Yeah. And told her to drop her pants, which I thought was so derogatory to her character.
Do you think that was her rear end?
I don't think that's Herrera.
No.
Stunt butt?
No way.
Oh, definitely.
Stunt butt.
Yeah.
Well, I like the
is
movie.
Is she funny? Do you think she's funny?
I'd love to see someone get credited.
Yes,
I think she
comic.
Can be funny. I don't know that she... I wasn't howling in this particular performance, but, you know, it wasn't necessarily a comedy. They were comedic elements.
Yeah, I mean, she's like...
And again, they probably hired a punch-up guy to stick him in there.
Right, I mean, she gets to Bolivia. She's all, like, out of sorts because she needs an oxygen mask, and she's nauseous, and... You know, I mean, it's kind of like
a really
slapsticky comedy. But I liked the first 40 minutes of the movie, and then I found the movie to be, you know, I got it. I got what they were trying to say. I thought it was redundant. And the end, which I won't give away, is really untrue, I think, to the character. And it's a Hollywood ending. You talk about people coming in, they go, well, we've got to have this Hollywood kind of ending. And it's just so, like, out of some Capra movie. Although Capra did it a million times better, and this is like... I mean, really, this is where you get... I mean, you got a jaded, satirical, you know, negative look at, like, the way these spin doctors work on doing campaigns. And again, without spoiling it, I mean, what happens at the end of this movie is just so... It is so... what's the word I'm looking for?
Stupid?
Yeah, stupid's good. I was looking for more of a highbrow.
It's trying too hard. It's
stupid
would
work. If they were paving the way to that for a little longer, then it might have worked. But the fact was that it was a completely different movie, the entire movie before that, and then they want to make it about something else.
Yeah, they're both... Thornton and Bullock are both callous, I don't care about anybody things, and all of a sudden, I mean, you're going to do some high-minded nonsense.
I think this was all better done in something called Wag the Dog, which was about...
Wag the Dog had no Hollywood ending, which I liked.
It was,
you know...
What about the sort of pseudo-subplot involving that young kid who was all idealistic, and he had his idealism shattered?
Oh, yeah, right.
I found it a pretty unsatisfying subplot.
Native Bolivian kid who was like, you held me up as a baby. I have a photograph of you holding to the politician or something like that.
Most of the supporting characters, except for Billy Bob Thornton, were pretty much just there to serve Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, I don't know. There's better movies than this. I mean, we were talking on the TV show today, Talking Pictures, on Demand, which airs in New York One here in New York and nationally on Time Warner Cable, about Bullworth, which is I think a better movie to, which is also, you know, about politicians not. This was co-written, directed, and starring Warren Beatty as a politician who, you were saying, Bill, you were saying, he puts a hit out on himself.
Yeah, right at the top of the movie, he hires somebody to kill him because he thinks he's dying, I think. I haven't seen it in a long time, but then he becomes this, like...
No, I don't think he's dying. I think
an insurance scam. He's trying to get the money for his daughter.
Right,
he's just sick of the whole thing. He just wants to kill himself.
Yeah, he's ready.
And which frees him up to... doing speeches like he's just saying whatever, you know, like the thing
he starts rapping. That's hilarious. I mean,
but in the beginning, he's not even rapping. He's just saying the most politically incorrect things that are imaginable. I mean, it's just
he's doing Donald Trump before Donald Trump.
I thought of Donald Trump. I rewatched the movie when we did the show, you know, and I'd seen it years ago. And he's doing Donald Trump, and people are. The campaign manager is just rolling his eyes at what he's saying, but the public's he's
also doing Halle Berry, which is very critical probably to the reason that he decided to make that movie, because he makes so few.
Yeah, that romance thing didn't really
That's the thinnest part of the movie.
That was the weak link in that particular movie.
Although way ahead of its time in terms of if everybody slept with everybody, we'd have one color baby. That's one of the lines in the movie that I thought was so interesting. That actually our friend James Toback contributed to the film. He was a punch-up guy on that film, on Bullworth.
You ever punch up a script, Dan?
No, they never asked me to do that.
It's a good gig.
It sounds like a good gig.
Carrie Fisher makes $150,000 really? Grand a week. That's the most famous thing she does.
I didn't know she was a punch-up chick.
Yeah. In fact, she might have been somebody that Sandra Bullock would have called, because she's famous for being the woman that female actresses call to beef up the women's parts.
How would you have made the Our Brand is Crisis funnier? What would you have done? I don't want to put you on the
spot. That's a question you should have asked. You should have emailed me yesterday with a thought into it.
All right, we'll just move on then.
But I would have had...
Because the punch-up guys get a chance to look at the movie script and then
actually,
to write
Neil,
it.
Before we move on, I have audio from Sandra Bullock. Explain yourself.
Oh, yeah, we need to hear that.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
And,
Bill,
she did a press conference.
Bill was with Sandra Bullock in... And when he set that up there.
Yeah. First question out of the box was, did she do this for political reasons? I think that all the journalists were hoping she's saying yes, but actually she didn't.
I'm not politically vocal. I just want what's best for our country. I would like my rights represented, those of my son, you know, those very selfish views. I think everyone else has them. But I you know, when this film came along, it came along at a time that I was having that sort of internal discussion with myself about... who in our country would step out of their comfort zone to help others for the greater good?
And then Sandra Bullock said she was inspired by a documentary, but not the documentary that this film is based on.
Watched the Freedom Riders documentary many times. There's one story that just really affected me about this young woman who, first to go to college, she went and told her parents, I'm going to leave college in order to ride and to represent the future. And I mean, I was so moved by that. I go, who would do that now? Who would do that for my son? I would, but I would do anything for my son. But what people would still get together and peacefully protest for the greater good? And then this came along.
And finally, she gave a word about being female in Hollywood.
I never realized I was a woman and that there were, I mean, I know it's female, but I never realized that there were limitations or I was looked at as less than. Until I was actually pretty deep in this business and I had a pretty unsettling moment. And I went, oh my God, I'm being treated this way because I'm female.
Oh, being a woman in Hollywood. No, there's been a lot. Amy Schumer, the comedian, has been talking a fair amount about it. And I know that this issue of non-equal pay, Jennifer Lawrence, I think, brought that up recently, that she wasn't paid equally.
J-Lo said that? Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence, not J-Lo.
Right, not Jennifer Lopez.
Not Jennifer
Lopez.
J-Law. No, but that's a big issue now about not being paid, you know, equally in Hollywood or being treated differently as a woman. It seems to me in Hollywood, if you're one of the five people that can make a living at it, shut up.
Perry, you could chime into this. And Bill Bregoli plays this game. Bill Bregoli is very good friends with Gilbert Gottfried. And they play this game where, I mean, it's all these actresses age out at a certain point, you know? And if you look back, Linda Fiorentino, and the list goes on and on, there are all these actresses where, they were, hot. I don't mean hot in terms of their looks. I mean hot in terms of box office appeal and being cast in movies for like a while, and then you know, they reach a certain age, and it's kind of like, let me get the new car.
They're
let me get the new model.
They're not effable anymore. It's that whole Amy Schumer sketch.
They weren't
which is
complaining
so
when they were effable, and they took the part from the person that wasn't effable.
Right.
They didn't say, no, I can't take this part because Deborah Winger hasn't worked in years.
Have you seen the Schumer sketch where they're all sitting on by?
I have not.
Yeah, it's a 12 great. Angry Men sketch.
No, no, this is the different. This is with the women who have decided that they're not. They're too old now to be. It's like I think it's Courtney Cox.
I know what you're talking. I've seen the 12 Angry Men one, not
yeah,
this one.
No, this is like it's Rosanna Arquette, and they're all sitting like in a picnic, and they're then.
I know
and
exactly what you're talking
Schumer
about.
Schumer walks up on them, and they've decided they're all at the age now where they're not being cast as women who men want to have sex with. They're just to clean it up a little bit because it's a Schumer thing, and it's just brilliant. It's one of the funniest things I've seen about this topic.
Do you think, Perry, that, I mean, do you see that? I mean, that, you know, like, I mean...
We are paying you less than the rest of us for this.
Do you see that there are women, you know, that, I mean, you know, there are, like somebody said, like five women, like dance, there's like five women that just work, like continually. But there are these women that were just like in the day getting all the parts, you know, and...
yeah, I mean, it's something that's been like, happening
Where's
years.
Where's Julia Stiles now, you know what I mean? Like,
where's Julia Stiles
Right,
now?
I mean, there's so many of these, where are they now? And they were like...
Well, there's where are they with men, too.
Where's Alicia Silverstone now? Like, where is she?
I think I saw a YouTube video.
She was in a Broadway play, I think, for like.
All right. Well, I'm glad they're still working.
You know, that's showbiz. It's just not fair to anybody. It's not fair if you're not good looking. It's not fair if you're, you know, too fat or too. I mean, it's just garbage all the way around. You know. So if you're lucky enough to get in there, I mean, you got lucky.
It's just the problem with the hot new thing. I mean, the hot new thing is always so specific. That's why we have Jennifer Lawrence right now.
So will Jennifer Lawrence in 10 years from now, will we sit around if we're still doing this podcast and say, well, you know, gee, remember how big Jennifer Lawrence is? I mean, is that...
I could never predict that, but I'd be very curious to see where she is.
Because that, you can't get bigger than Jennifer Lawrence.
I'd love to see where
Julia Stiles was never at the level of Jennifer Lawrence.
I feel like in Julia Stiles' day, we didn't have, like, the Jennifer Lawrences, though, in the same way.
Or even Linda Fiorentino. I mean, she was in Men in Black 1 and 2. I don't think she was in the third one. Was she?
No, but I mean, I think in Jennifer Lawrence, you have somebody who has a very good relationship with David O. Russell and that has been guided the way almost the old movies studios were run, where they'd have Katharine Hepburn always doing films with George Cukor or whoever, but they were working all the time with the same people, and I think he's on a really hot streak, so she's on a really hot streak.
I think Jessica Chastain's another one who will keep going for years and years and years.
Well, let me ask you this, Dan. Right now, you can't get bigger as a comic than Amy Schumer.
Right, yeah.
I mean, she, you know, her stand-up started blowing up, then she did Trainwreck with Judd Apatow, and, you know, that was huge. And then, you know, and now she seems to be like, every time I, you know, look at a news site, it's like Amy Schumer saying this, Amy Schumer saying that. Do you think that she could sustain that the way, you know, I don't know, let's say like a Chris Rock, who's had a career for quite a number of years and is still at the top of his game? Or is it going to be, you know, a flame out? Like, let's say, you know, who's that comic that was... I like Amy Schumer, but nobody likes this guy's comedy.
Dane Cook?
Dane Cook, right. This guy's filling up the arenas,
right.
And now he's doing, like, Chuckle Hut, you know?
Amy Schumer will be somewhere between Dane Cook and Chris Rock. She won't flame out quite as catastrophically as Dane Cook did. I don't know that she'll hold on to the level that she's at as long as Chris Rock has. Well, that would be my prediction, but, of course, there's no predicting any of it.
What about Chris Rock doing the Oscars again? What do you think of that? I mean, that was just announced
this
week.
I think I need
to
email Chris Rock and see if he needs writers for the Oscars.
Right, you could be the punch.
Or I don't have his email address. I have his, we're Facebook friends.
Would Schumer have been a better host?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Maybe right now, she's hot. Well, I love Chris Rock. I mean, Chris Rock put me
she
in
the movie.
She
saw a new voice.
Five.
Yes,
so,
we know that.
I know, so I'm...
But we won't hold that against
him. But I love Chris Rock. That monologue that he did on Saturday Night Live, where he talked about they should rename the Freedom Tower to the building I'm never going in, because I'm never going in that building.
Yeah, no,
that is one of the most...
The question is whether
hilarious.
They'll let him be that, and whether that material will play in that room that night. You know, it's like he learned the last time you do jokes about Jude Law, And everybody goes, And so it's tough sledding. If you go back and look at that on YouTube, he actually gets a lot of laughs that night.
Well, Howard Stern was saying the other day that whoever has hosted the Oscars, and he's interviewed pretty much all of them, they all say it's a no-win situation. He was talking about how Neil Patrick Harris, how everybody loved Neil Patrick Harris hosting the Tonys and loved him hosting the Emmys, and he got a lot of flack, and like nobody really, you know, the room is on edge. Everybody's like nominated, you know, or they're guests of people that are nominated, and it's a very tough room to play, and you know, and you just kind of get bashed in the press the next day. Nobody's saying like, brilliant job. Once in a blue moon, like the first Billy Crystal performance,
the
which
first
is why
couple of Billy Crystals were good, and I think growing up as a kid, the Johnny Carson ones were good. I mean, it seems to have turned into this thing where we have to get a big name and they have to score big, and we got to get younger audience to watch this thing because nobody's watched it since Titanic. The numbers go down every couple of years. And
you ever watch historical footage of the old Oscars before they were televised?
Deadly. Yeah. Yeah.
They were awful.
It's just basically...
Well, you know what it was?
Party.
The winner is, in New York, Kirk Douglas, because air travel wasn't as, prevalent as it is today. So they had all these people doing Broadway over there in New York. So it was a bi-coastal telecast. And it was never... And it wasn't technically smooth either. It would be in New York, and the camera would still be in L.A. or in New York.
It's still not technically smooth.
No, but
every
it was really a mess.
If you ever,
wasn't Judy Garland in the hospital one year, and they thought she was going to win, and they had a camera crew there, and she was giving birth to Liza, I think, for... I don't know the movie, but she lost, and so they just, like, took the cameras and left.
There was an Indian director one year, and
M. Night Shyamalan?
No, Sajaraya Ritt, I think.
So there was a twist at the end of the
Sajaraya Ritt, and he was on his deathbed, and they went to his bed in India and gave him this honorary Oscar live from, that was pretty bad. Moving on. We're going to get to Halloween movies in a moment, but I made Dan and everybody else watch this movie that's coming on demand this week, which was in theaters a few months ago, called The Gift. How'd you like The Gift, Perry?
I loved The Gift. I thought it was so incredibly well done. It is from Joel Edgerton. Joel Edgerton, who knows? He directed this. This is his feature directorial debut, and he plays this guy, Gordo the Weirdo, and Gordo's high school friend, played by Jason Bateman, moves back to their hometown, and they bump into each other, and Gordo starts this kind of creepy relationship with Jason Bateman's character and his wife, played by Rebecca Hall, where he's giving them gifts and just being a total weirdo about their new relationship. And I think this is one of the best domestic thrillers I've seen in a very long time. It's just so tight and well done.
What do you think of it, Brigoli?
I liked it a lot. And it was made for something like $3 million or something ridiculous. There's not a big chase scene, but there's some really creepy talk between the characters.
It's a throwback to like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle and those movies in the 90s that were big popcorn films that just had a tension to them that we don't do much anymore. And I think Joel Edgerton, however you want to say it, from the Caribbean or the Caribbean, is really good at making, as you said on the show today, a creepy kind of atmosphere or sort of a feel for this whole thing that works really well.
He took an old formula. We've seen this in so many movies, and he put some new spins on it. And I was literally guessing the whole movie. I didn't know where this was going to go. And Edgerton, who wrote it and directed it and stars in it, was very good and creepy as Gordo the Weirdo, the character Gordo the Weirdo. I thought Bateman was good. I thought Rebecca Hall was very good. And
Bateman was great.
I love seeing Bateman as kind of the not-so-good guy.
But yeah, he's good as the not-so-good guy.
No, but I don't like seeing him in that way.
Oh, you
but
like him in the...
You're in Arrested Development.
You want to see him in the Hogan Family.
Yeah, I'd rather see a happy, nice guy, Jason Bateman,
my
druthers.
I like Jason Bateman, but he does this so well.
Well, sure. Just a personal thing.
Did you see Bad Words by any chance?
No,
where he
I didn't
was
see
the
it.
That's that I love Ooh. That film. Love
yeah,
that.
He's kind of a prick
he's
in that.
He's a pretty big jerk in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But funny,
well, but is he jerk in a funny way or
yeah,
that's different. Jerk in a funny way is fine.
Well, like
cuz he's
jerk
really
in a funny
good at that.
But mean-spirited way. Like he's like a not great
like
guy
black
at
comedy
all.
Type
a little bit,
way.
But he has an agenda. He has a reason why.
The big
shut your curry hole.
The big what I thought was plot hole or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, with a thriller, it's kind of hard to talk about because, you know.
Well, you can
too
talk
away,
around
but,
it.
But you know, he should, when he met Gordo and he met him, and knowing what he knew, what Jason Bateman knew.
Yeah.
Why is he just kind of going along with all
that's
that?
What I said to Perry in the green room after we did the TV show today. I said, do you think we were talking? I said, yeah. Do you think he knew from the beginning when he goes, like, I don't recognize you? And then he goes, oh, and I'm not giving anything away. This is the beginning of the movie. And he goes, you know, yeah, I'm Gordo. Oh, you're Gordo.
No, Dan's
and at
right.
That point,
Dan's right. He knows but, completely.
Yeah,
there's
I
no.
Well,
the
very first thing he goes, you were unrecognized. He might not know that very first second, but once he
knew who he was, he knew the whole.
He knew the whole story. That
so
he,
then it becomes, what's his agenda, and I have to get ahead of it. I have to like know what he's going to do. That's the conceit I gave it. Like he was going to. You're right. They could move, or he could just stop. Talking to him completely and shut him down in some way, but I think he wants to know, you know, how far is this guy going to go with this? And I want to be ahead of it if he's going to.
Well,
ever
that
tell
could
my
be,
wife.
But I think that could have been more better treated, better addressed, I suppose, if that were the case.
What do you think, Perry?
I just thought it was his way of manipulating the situation. Like he walked in. I think the second he saw Gordo, he knew exactly who he was, and he kind of just played it. However, he thought that he could be a step ahead, and I don't think he had any idea how far Gordo was going to go to ruin his life. So I think he was just caught off guard.
Right, because we catch him later, and this isn't giving much away, ruining a colleague's life. And the guy will do anything to get ahead. I like
Jason Bateman, not Gordo.
Bateman, yeah.
Yeah, I liked it too. I liked it too. I like that kind of movie, though. I mean, it's this is a cut above there's some really bad examples of this movie, but there's a movie. It's not about a couple. I call them like good crap movies, like The Crush. Did you ever see The Crush with Cary Elwes and Alicia Silverstone?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
whatever
it's
happened
like,
to her?
Well, it's whatever
like a
happened
fun
to
movie
him
to watch
too?
That's just kind of like. You know, it's just entertaining. You know what I mean?
Elwes was
this
a guy
is more intelligent than that. What?
Elwes, just quickly. Elwes was a guy that was so beautiful as a man that the same thing happened to him as what happened to these chicks.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he was in Saw. He was, and he also produces. He's like behind the scenes.
Okay, well maybe he's behind the scenes, but this was a guy that
That's
kind
interesting.
Of were he not that beautiful, wouldn't have gone anywhere.
Yeah, he's in The Princess Bride. He was the prince, right?
He was the
right?
prince and The Princess Bride. And
for people who don't know
like
who we're talking about.
Almost just like a one-hit wonder. He had his claim to fame and then just like fizzled out after
Well, he
that.
Was in Glory. He played Matt Broderick's, the other military guy, the friend.
I just have in my head
and Hollywood and Men in Tights.
So what
oh, I love that.
Yes, he was in Men in Tights. Well, is he doing anything now?
And he was in The Crush.
He was just at, I don't think he was physically there, but he was in Rob Reiner's new movie, Being Charlie, which premiered at TIFF, which is,
really well, I interviewed
woof
him.
In a good way or woof in a bad way?
No, it's, I mean, we just spoke about.
Rob Reiner can't make a hit.
No,
what the hell is
and
happening?
Having just spoken about The American President, watching that movie makes me so incredibly sad. Having
this
just
is
seen
Spinal Tap
Charlie
to this is now Rob Reiner.
It's incredible.
I'm looking at Cary Elwes' filmography here, and yeah, it is not nothing that.
There's
I,
a map, and he's all over.
That I don't recognize any of this stuff. I mean. The Anna Nicole TV movie, Hansel and Gretel Get Baked, and there's a nice marijuana leaf on the poster of that movie.
Oh, okay.
The Story of Luke. I mean, yeah, you're right, Dan. It's like Cary Elwes has faded away. Halloween's coming up. We saw a real awful movie that's on demand. Don't see this. It sounds like it would have been good. That's why we picked it to do. It's called Tales of Halloween. 10 different directors do 10 different stories that are scary and gory. And I'm like, oh, well, you figure one of these out of the 10.
Right. I don't know where they found 10 directors that were all as bad as the other. I really couldn't. You picked a couple out on the show and said, oh, I like this one or I like that one. But I thought they were all pretty lousy.
They're awful. And one's worse than the other. And you would figure with 10 different directors and 10 different, you know, most of the directors wrote them. You know, and different casts, and a couple of people make cameos in them. I mean,
this is definitely a movie where, like, the directors brought their friends in to do it, because I could pick certain people where I'm like, I know you worked with with you, and right. then like you can connect to that person.
John Landis has like a tenth of a second cameo.
Yeah, I know. It's like, why would you even want to be in that and associate? But it's just awful. All these, I mean, there's one where somebody's dressed up as Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, and she's chased by, you say it's the guy.
It's called Friday the 31st, so it's supposed to be a spin on Friday the 13th. So yeah.
But doesn't Jason wear the hockey mask?
He does wear the hockey mask.
This guy had the leather face mask on from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Maybe it was a play.
You two
on
are
both.
Devoting way more to this movie than it deserves.
Then there's another awful one where, like, somebody, the first one where they tell some, like, campfire story about the maniac who didn't get his, wasn't allowed to eat his Halloween candy, and he goes psycho, or the pumpkin head one.
The problem with the beginning of the movie is it almost feels like it's the same story over and over and over, even though different filmmakers are making the movie, where they're like, look at these crazy kids who just raise hell on Halloween.
Right.
Do you know that was Adrian Barbeau doing the voiceover work on that?
Yeah. And like that was another problem too. Like I spoke about Trick or Treat on the show. One of the best parts about Trick or Treat is how it weaves together all the stories and makes it feel like it's happening in one world.
Yeah.
They're trying to use the radio voice to connect everything here, and it's like, no. Yeah. And like a cheap looking
She married John Carpenter. That does not make her the queen of horror.
You know, Perry's too modest to mention this, but she's actually made horror movies.
What?
Yeah, I went to film school, and we made a bunch of shorts there, and I produced my first feature last year.
What was the name of it?
Child Eater. You could watch Child Eater online.
Really?
Yeah.
Do I want to do that?
If you just Google Child Eater and Vimeo staff picks, it's right
on
there.
Is it a short film?
Yeah, it's 15 minutes, and then it went and played at South By and a bunch of other festivals, and then we shot a feature in
Do I bother asking you what it's about, or does the title just say it all?
It's about a boogeyman who eats the eyes of children to keep himself from going blind.
Oh, so
you wrote it or just directed it?
I produced it.
You produced it? Wow. Yeah. You did not write it?
No. I was on the producing track in school, and I teamed up with a writer-director, and he wrote and directed
the
short and the feature. Short's 15 minutes. The feature will be close to 90.
It's going to be a feature.
Oh, yeah. We're within the next week or two, it will be.
Neil, after the short,
finished.
People were clamoring.
Are you a producer? What's your line of work?
Producer.
You're
well,
producer.
On that, it was a producer.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you producing any horror films, Dan?
No, I was never a huge horror fan. I like Halloween. I forgot which one it was, where he's in the mental hospital and Donald Pleasance.
Yeah, the first Halloween.
Jamie Lee Curtis movie?
I think it was the third one. I saw it was like Halloween. In 1988 or 19. Maybe they're all with Donald Pleasance in a mental hospital. But this is the only one, you know. But I think Jason had escaped the mental hospital, and
so
I think it was Halloween 3.
Before
anyway.
We go,
I think Pleasance was in like most of them.
What's your favorite scary movie? Halloween being
my favorite Halloween movie is probably Trick or Treat. My favorite horror movie, period, is Scream. I mean, my cat's named after Deputy Dewey, so I'm obsessed with that movie.
Interesting. Bregoli?
Probably The Exorcist. Good old Standby.
For quality, I would go with maybe Rosemary's Baby. For pure gore, you know, where just blood is spewing all over the place, I'd go with the original from like 1974, I believe is the year, or 74, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
You know, that's actually not very bloody and gory. They don't actually show
I haven't
anything.
Seen it in 40 years.
Oh
so.
My God, you need to rewatch. It holds up better than any classic slasher film out there, by far.
I think the original Saw is pretty gory and kind of a cool idea that they've done way too many times since then. But I have to tell you that I saw the original Alien by myself in a theater that had the air conditioning on too high in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And I was all alone in that place, and I was, the living hell got scared out
what
of me.
About Silent Night, Deadly Night? That I thought was universally acknowledged as the granddaddy of the
Santa's mall. Back and you're in his bag.
Now, I don't know if you'd qualify this as a... I certainly wouldn't qualify Alien as a horror movie.
Well, just in terms of scaring me.
But in terms of...
Police Academy 6.
In terms
that
of...
That scares me that they keep make that they kept making them.
In terms of movie, a movie that just made me put me made me uneasy and for a while was Vanilla Sky.
Really?
That's not what I expected you to say.
Yeah.
No, that's a movie that's not really a horror movie, but it just...
I hate that movie.
It just flattened me emotionally, and for several days after.
Is the takeaway you like that film, or you would?
I don't know.
Do you recommend it to people?
It certainly had an effect. So you know, if that's the effect you're looking for, I thought it was a real trippy, crazy movie. Yeah. I thought it was very effective at that. If that's the mood you want to put yourself.
And the interesting thing about Vanilla Sky, the Tom Cruise, Penelope Cruz movie, directed by Cameron Crowe, is that it's a remake of a of another film,
a foreign language film,
which is essentially, and Penelope Cruz, I believe, is in that one, and it's essentially the same movie. Did you ever see that one?
Ober Los Ojos
seen the one
or something.
That it was remade from.
Well, Dan, like, maybe you can.
Ober Los Ojos or something like that.
It was, I don't know.
It was something about Los Ojos, which is, I think, the eyes.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm not a Vanilla Sky fan. I didn't like, but having not seen the original, I have a feeling it was better than the remake. And I hope you enjoyed sitting around talking movies. Next week, we're talking about, and I'm going to tip this off, we're talking about a movie called Spotlight, which is with Michael Keaton and Stanley Tucci and Liev Schreiber.
Rachel McAdams.
And Rachel McAdams. And I'm just going to tell you that I would take any bet at any, from anybody, I would guarantee you that this movie gets nominated for Best Picture of the Year. And
well,
I think
they picked 10 now, Neil. That's not
well,
really going
on
there.
And I think there's a very good chance it's going to win. And I love
that's
this
I
movie. So we're going to talk about that in detail next week, along with, I don't know, what else are we talking about next week, Bill?
Movies done by the same guy who wrote Spotlight, correct?
Right, Up, believe it or not. Yeah. Right, yeah. He wrote Up. And
A Million Dollar Arm, which I liked, which I thought was underrated when it came out, a kind of a Disney movie with Don Draper.
Right, and on the TV show, I'm talking about my favorite comedy ever, Dan. Can you guess what my favorite comedy of all time is? Before we go, you got the entire palette of any comedy made from the Charlie Chaplin era to the present. I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
The movie was released in 1967, and there was a remake of the movie. I don't like the remake. I like the original.
I'm at a loss. not Mad World.
No, but I love that movie.
Loves that.
I
so
love
that,
that movie.
That's one of
that's
his,
I don't know if that was 67
movie.
Or
no, that was like
that was 65.
Or
65. Yeah. No, the movie is the original producers with Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. And on that note, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll listen. We'll close it out, Bill. I'm always bad at saying goodbye.
Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.